Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, all flight controllers, I'm going around the horn. Make your gun or goes based on the data you have printed LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling, fine.
Okay, retro, go.
Fido,
go. Guide,
go.
Control,
go.
Telcom,
go.
GNC,
go.
Econ,
go.
Surgeon,
go.
Capcom, we're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios in Shingle Springs, California, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your host, John Almada.
And it's been a good weekend out here in the Sierra Nevada, here in Northern California. Beautiful day, nice and cool. Got up this morning, ran out, got my hair cut. Amazing amount of hair for a 50-year-old man came flying off my head, so I am looking more like a Navy fighter pilot than ever before. Let's see. We've got Disgruntled Dan is with us. I got Kathy, of course, manning the boot button. And we have Dominica More and Fire Witch is with us. And for the lurkers out there, good to see you. Not a normal night for broadcast for us. I was going to do the show yesterday. I was not having a great time here. My mom was sick and not feeling good. And I was having a little bit of trouble with my hands. My hands were hurting badly. And I just decided to I'm going to lay off, and so I let our guest Lillian know that we were just going to try to delay a day, and it turned out it was a fortuitous thing because Lillian wrote me a note back and said it was a good thing because the thunderstorm knocked out all the power, and there would have been no show anyway. So anyway, but we have been working on the ranch here all day. I mowed the upper orchard and got an awful lot done. We've been burning and hacking and pushing and pulling, and I've got the garden shed completely cleaned up, and we're getting the garden is in full swing, and Fire Witch is blessing our room. Thank you, my dear. We love you dearly. And she has now moved out all the way to Pennsylvania, so we are glad she made it there safely. And tonight, though, we're going to have Lillian Caldwell on with us, and I know she's sitting there listening in. And if you want to visit her website, see what's up with Lillian, she has LillianCaldwell.com, www, and also she is the host of Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, or PIVTR, that she started in 2005 and has grown tremendously through lots of hard work, terrific co-workers, great partners, and her own sense of self-worth. And we've had her on a couple of times before. She's really interesting to talk with, and she's gonna talk with us a little bit about some of the Mayan things, and we're gonna talk a little bit about. Also, I love the way our conversations go because I never know what's gonna happen when I have her on, and she's really interesting, and we have a give and take when we talk with each other. So I'm looking forward to that. So with that, no further ado, I am going to go over to the netbook here. And click a little click here, and there it is, Lillian.
Yes.
Hello, my dear.
Hiya. Hi, how you doing?
I'll tell you what, when I go to bed tonight, I'm going to sleep good. We worked our tails off out here. The garden's in full swing, you know, we got all our yellow squash are up, but all the zucchinis are not coming up. So we're going to Walmart to pick up some already grown zucchinis. But yeah, it's been a good day. Nice. I feel like we accomplished a lot. So, but how are you?
Oh, well, I'm doing pretty good. Chase the birds away from our blackberries that are growing by our front door because we didn't get an awful lot of blackberries last year, and this year we're going to have a bumper crop. When it comes to berries, I don't share.
Oh.
Not even with birds.
I know the feeling. We found those plastic. I saw these at Walmart. They're plastic owls, and we got a bunch of those. And we put them on bamboo sticks and move them around the garden. And birds just vamoose. They don't like those things at all.
Really,
just,
I'll have to try it. We use, you know, I rent out some children from time to time and stick them up in the garden, and they seem to scare away a lot of critters.
Huh. Yeah. How many kids do you have? That's an interesting thought. You hire kids.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. A lot of them like the idea of during the summer, we have the art festival come into town, and they always hire one or two or even three people to make themselves look like statues, and they just kind of stay still for as many hours as they possibly can, and they kind of fool the eye. So if they make sure they don't sneeze, of course, or cross their legs or something like that. But sometimes it's very difficult to tell whether they're real or not. And so I had a couple of kids who wanted to do that. And I said, all right, fine, you can be my scarecrow for the day.
I don't know how long they would last doing that. But
hey, no, well, it's like... if they last 20 seconds, they last long, but they like to do it, and then they like to get another friend in with their cameras that can do the, whatchamacallit, video, and they do that, and they say that's how they taunt their parents sometimes. I'm just glad I don't have to raise a child anymore.
I know the feeling. I remember being a father, and I was convinced after it was all over with that my real name was Butt Dad.
Yes, yes. I used to tell people, no, I'm not Lillian. My name is Ben's mom, and I've gone through by that name for at least 18 plus years with him. And when he finally left home, it was like I had to find myself all over again, because for the last 18 years. I was always introduced, and this is Ben's mom. And people would say, and how is Ben's mom? And Ben's mom would say, a lot better off if Ben was gone. And they didn't laugh. I thought it was very funny, of course. But now he has two girls of his own, and I just can't wait until people say, oh, he's the twins' father. Hi, twins' father. How are things going with the twins? I can't wait to hear that.
There's no issue here, is there? I just can't detect that at all.
No, there's no issue. No. I'm just delighted that now I'm a grandparent and I can take them and spoil them rotten and then dump them back on his doorstep and say, see ya.
No, I don't know. I actually miss my kids. I mean, I haven't seen them in for a long time because I was a stepfather and then I got divorced and all that. And I've tracked them on Facebook. I see what's going on with them and all that. And I've got the little picture of them and that. But I'll tell you, I really did like the process of being a father, though. I mean, for all the crazy stuff that went on, there was a reward in being a dad, you know, and tomorrow's dad's day.
I would never admit to him that I miss him and I miss his, you know, the grandkids and everything, because if you do that, you give them power over you. So I'm a firm believer that they say, miss me, and I say, oh, no, I got a very active life. And I know they're saying, yeah, sure, liar, pants on fire, but I think that's part of the game.
Well, thunderstorm. You know, that was interesting how that worked out yesterday. The thunderstorm.
It was not a thunderstorm. We had hail bouncing off our sunlights. You know, the panels of glass that let the sun in and stuff.
Yeah.
And they were just bouncing off they were just bouncing off the glass. And I had collected all my little discs and my, whatchamacallit. You can tell that it's light for me because I can't remember any of the really good words. But you plug them into your USB port and it saves everything on your disk drive. So I collected all those and everything that was real precious to me, my flip camera, my new microphone, my new webcam. And I was poised to go down the ladder, which is straight down into the crawl space in case we had a tornado that would roar through, because there was already a tornado that came through about a month ago, about 5-6 miles north of us, and just obliterated the town.
Whoa.
Yeah, so you know, you're not safe from tornadoes. People say, oh, there are no tornadoes in Michigan. Yeah, there are. There are even tornadoes in Minnesota. Somebody was taking some pictures of the sky, and they caught these 3 or 4 funnels that had touched down in Minnesota. So they're just, those suckers are all over the place. You just don't know. I think what it really is I think that Mother Nature is summoning the troops and saying, okay, it's our turn now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've seen out here where I live, we get F1 and F2 class tornadoes here in California, and a lot of people don't actually believe that, but it's true. And we actually had the garden. I'm just sitting in my studio right now, and the garden at 200 feet from me right now was actually hit by a tornado, and it jumped over my home and took out a 50-foot oak tree, and I was trapped in this house that I'm in right now. I had to break branches because the 50-foot tree landed and just missed my door, and I was, I literally had to have people cut me out of the dim so I could get out of my place.
That happened in Michigan, in Washtenaw County, where I'm located. Some tree, it got up to hurricane strength of wind last night, apparently, in this part of Washtenaw, and a tree, like a lance, went through the roof and pinned some poor guy to his bed. And he had to excruciate himself, and then he got rescued. But they showed pictures of cars being wiped out and totally crushed beneath tree trunks. And the lightning set some home on fire, some completely burned out one building. And they had another story where there were three homes clustered around two on one side of the street and then one on the back side of another street, and lightning hit one and then jumped to the other two homes, setting them completely on fire. So it was pretty wild here last night.
Now, did it knocked the power out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're...
And you always know when the generators go because they blow up. You see this glowing green light, and it's not plasma. It's a generator about to blow, and they just explode.
We had that. We're still actually, I mean, part of today's work that I was doing, we had a absolutely horrific snowstorm hit here in the Sierra, and it literally destroyed, but roughly 20% of our trees are either severely damaged or totally downed here on the property. And so, you know, we've been just doing nothing but cleaning up damage from that storm ever since. And I actually had to, I was going out today and I was assessing the damage from that. And there's trees literally that I have to tape around and keep people away from, because if you walk under them, it's a severe danger, you know, of one of these limbs coming down. And the reason I'm mentioning that, in addition, because you just reminded me of that with that storm also had all the electrical transformers were blowing up. Same thing. We were watching. You would hear this big bzzz off in the distance and see a big flash, and then you would know, oh, there goes another transformer, and then another one, and you'd hear it all over. And it just then all of a sudden it was just this amazing silence, and snow has this amazing silence about it. Once you, it seems to deaden the sound everywhere. But what was strange this morning, my new neighbors next door are renting the house next door to us. Gal was on a tractor this morning. She heard a crack over her head. She just started the tractor, and the tractor went about 3 feet and stopped. And about a 1,300-pound limb came flying down and landed 2 feet just missed her by 2 feet. She would have been killed if she had been under it. So, I mean, that's what it is like to have the oak trees around this place. They're friggin' dangerous.
Well, but, they're old enough. A lot of the tree. There was some lady who was hysterical on the television. You saw what was left of her SUV, and it was kind of like a pancake. All you needed to do was put butter and syrup on it. And she said, gosh, if we had been in that car to the way we were had planned to leave and we didn't because blue lost or misplaced something, so everybody had to go back into the house and look for it, of course. And her car was just flattened by a tree. They were showing pictures of the electrical poles that carry the wires for the homes that were snapped off. And
yeah.
Just because of the way the wind hit them with such gale force that they treated them like a bunch of toothpicks.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I agree with you. I think that with the global warming, the things that are occurring with these changes in the weather, it is creating more powerful storms. And you know, I mean, even where I work, you know, out in it's about 18 miles from here. I work in a defense contractor plant out there, and there was actually one of our remote test buildings where a woman went in last year. She went to sit in the girls, you know, the women's restroom and was doing what she had to do. And we had a tornado that hit and actually took the roof right off the building and left her sitting there looking up into the, you know, and she was pretty freaked out. But I've seen more than once out there. I remember a couple of years back, we actually, I looked out, a bunch of my friends came in and said, John, come out and look. And I stepped out of our administration building, took a look, and over engineering, the engineering complex, I looked up, and 2,000 feet right up was a skyhook with a funnel cleft coming right down, and it just was sitting there hanging over the building, which was just an awesome sight. I didn't have a camera. You can't take cameras on plant, but it was unbelievable. You never forget stuff like that. But, you know, they look pretty from a distance, but, boy, what they do on the ground when they hit. Oh, geez.
And they have a mind of their own, and it's very interesting. I find it fascinating that a tornado doesn't always have a predetermined path and that it can pass within inches of you and you're just fine because the winds are on the inside, it's not on the outside or something like that. And yet, in other times, they'll have enough energy to pick you up or a car up or whatever and fling you, you know, 200, 300 feet away or a mile away.
Yeah, it's funny because my mother's side of the family used to have a big ranch. We had just a huge, huge cattle, you know, cattle farm and ranch out in Kansas. And the house was destroyed, I think, two or three times. They lost the house, the main ranch house. And they finally just packed it in and said, that's it, and moved out west and, you know, left that all behind. But there's an old story in the family of one of the times that it didn't destroy the place, but it took the roof off. They came back in after the storm and looked, and all the ironing that was being done on the upper floor by my great-great-grandmother was actually still there, just as it had been. Nothing was disturbed, except it was all covered in mud.
Yeah, well, you know, it would have been nice if you said, and when everybody went back in, it was all iron flat, and to this day, we don't know how that happened. But
well, I'm just glad that you got through it, you know, and we'll just say some serious prayers for you, you know, as far as any future outbreaks. We've been watching that. I've been surprised to see Michigan and Minnesota getting that. It's just not the normal thing, you know.
Well, apparently the storms come up from the south, and it's kind of like a tornado alley. And if it comes up from the Gulf of Mexico and then files up through Texas and then comes up from that area and goes through Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, then chances are it will go come up because we're in the southern part of Michigan. And I think it's just sort of like bears and people. You like to take routes that you've already used and are well-worn, and you can see the tracks from 100 years ago. I think tornadoes get lazy, and they just pick these tracks, and they follow up them because
we were tracking the storm until, of course, the power went out. And you could see the boxes that was on the radar map, and it was the typical run up from the Gulf of Mexico coming right up to go into Michigan. Now, of course, a lot of it also comes across the Great Lakes as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that they have almost a memory, and it's the interaction between the land and the actual weather system itself. You know, predisposes, you know, repeated strikes in a particular area. You know, and I think that's something that's, you know, really being learned by, you know, these people doing the chasing and the, you know, meteorological services and all that. But still, I don't know. It just seemed, you know, every spring I'm used to seeing these storms come in and do what they do. But it's just, it just seems like there's more of it lately. I don't know.
Think that the Mother Earth or Terra, however you want to describe it, is disturbed. We're on radio, I'll watch my mouth, but is disturbed about that rip that is causing all the oil to come out, to escape on the bottom of the ocean. And you cannot tell me that that's not disturbing the ocean itself or the plates from which the oil is escaping from, that it's not doing further damage, that they have no idea of what's happening.
Oh, well. I would agree with you on that. I was looking, at some of the different. There are some pretty wild claims coming out, you know, especially on YouTube, and you have to kind of separate fact from fiction. But, the thing I was noticing was they were saying, okay, there's X amount of oil coming out per day from this well, and then they doubled it, and I thought. Boy, that's a big mistake to be making. You know, did they know that ahead of time, or was it just so confused that they, you know, they had to put more instrumentation down to get a real feel for what they were dealing with? And what got me was that the government itself kind of put BP in the position of having to go out for deep oil exploration, because they were really leaning on them not to drill in the shallower waters where it's actually safer to drill. So the government itself, you know, is running around beating its chest and saying all these things. And here it is, BP, you know, they screwed up. There's no doubt. But I'm looking at the government going, well, you guys kind of pushed them into this. And, you know, now they got this problem. And I'm just hoping that they can come up with a way to at least contain it. You know, I mean, you know, the damage is done with what's going on, but if they can contain it, you know,
they're talking about this evening of taking off the cap that they already have on and putting something else on it. Their robots are working on it and everything. But what they're really scared about is that they're afraid that even if they put this new cap over it, that the rift may open more underneath the ocean where the rift is, so that the ocean bottom part of it where it just kind of explodes. And if they do that, they say there's nothing they can do to fix it, because then you're talking about ocean, you know, the dirt type part of it.
Well,
out from China, huh? If you turn the world upside down,
all the oil
will flow back out the other side. But they say that that you'll have a real deep rip in the earth itself. And that'll be difficult to contain, period.
Well, and it's funny. There's been some interesting proposals I saw for stopping it. One of them was to use magnets, believe it or not, extremely powerful neodymium magnets, which have the sheer strength to stick to the inside of the pipe and to block it up. But the problem is exactly what you said, is the pressure. Back pressure, which would then look for a place to escape, and it could blow up the casing itself and then just come through the ocean, and it would be way worse. It would be a worse disaster.
A tsunami coming over to the land, and it's all oil. This great wave out there and going, oh, we're just going to solve our needs. Yes, everybody get a bucket.
Oh, I don't know. I just think that I think they're going to get a handle on it. The thing that I would like to see is the government stop the blame game and look at the problem with, you know, okay, we got a critical problem. Let's marshal the forces. Let's do what Americans do best, you know, pull together and everybody help each other. And then we can talk about investigations later. You know, pull together, you know, don't run around beating up BP right now. They're horrified just as much as everybody else. They're trying to figure this out. I mean, look at the work they're trying to do with it. You know, the fact that the CEO or whoever it is, the American CEO is a little bit, you know, not the easiest personality to deal with, irrespective. You know, take a look at the corporation itself and see what it's trying to do. And they are working this. It's just a horrible thing. And it's literally, they're pushing the science in ways that has never been done. This is actually a learning experience for everybody. And we'll learn a lot about the Earth itself. I mean, because necessity is the mother of invention, we're going to be pushing this, you know, the development of, you know, extinguishing technologies, ways of shutting down these deeper wells like this. It's never been done. There's even been a proposal to use a nuclear weapon to take this thing out, which the Russians did way back.
No, you don't want to do that. That will not solve anything at all. My husband, the chemist, explained it to me. By the time he showed me what the atoms and everything would be doing, you'd be adding fat to the fire pan. It would just make it a lot worse.
Yeah, the Russians had this. What they did is they took a small tactical weapon, lowered it down a hole. What they had is a Wildcat well that was actually blowing. It was actually on fire, and it was literally just cooking everything in the region, and then contaminating the air all around, and there were byproducts that were coming, you know, from the smoke plume that were, you know, literally just wrecking the crops and everything. And what they did is they came up with a way to drill near the fire, contain the fire with a special cap they designed, and then they lowered this nuke down there, and then got way far away and detonated it. And it knocked it out in about 10 minutes. All the byproducts burned off, and they had actually contained it. It was, you know, an amazing development for them to do that. But, you know, it's one thing to do that on the surface. It's another for 5,000 feet.
Have no control as what's going down there. And as the robots have shown us time and time again, they're just not up to doing the fine tuning, the delicate type of work, to the details that need to be done. It's the fact that they are 3 or 4 miles down that makes things so more impossible to really get done. And because of that, you have to be a lot more careful on how you address it.
Yeah, it's just this is such a watershed moment for the whole oil industry, because you know, the fact that the government, its own ecological laws, you know, pushed this, you know, exploration out into the deeper water before the technology was even ready to do that. It just sort of, you know, that's what's ringing my chimes. It's like, hey, you know, you put them in the position, you put these oil companies in the position of having to do this. You're all in bed together. You know, you all, you know, so stop beating your chest so loud. Work on the immediate problem. And that's the thing is, you know, that's amazing to me is they're talking about this going on till Christmas. And it's just... Oh, I don't know, man. We've already done it to this point.
One of these things that no one was really prepared for. Nobody had any contingency plans. And you're caught between the hard rock and what you feel is necessary for the U.S. to have right now. And I'm the thing that happened under Obama. If somebody else had been president, it would happen under his watch or her watch. It just was one of those things that just happened. And but at the same time, if you're listening to what the people down there are saying, they want to keep on drilling. So it's like, excuse me, you haven't even addressed this problem, but you want to continue doing this to get more oil, while at the same time you're screaming and throwing hissy fits because not anything is being done enough to save your businesses. And I'm thinking to myself, well, let's step away from this. it's not only is affecting the New Orleans and the Gulf area, but it will affect some of the other areas depending on where the fish are going and where they're landing, where they're spawning, and the same thing for the birds who come into those part of the world and then go on to the rest of the part of the world to for their nesting or for their winter or for their summer flights. And they're willing to mortgage everything to keep on drilling for something that will just prolong the agony of us being addicted to something that there's a finite amount of.
You know, it's funny. I look at the transition it would take to could take our current infrastructure and convert over to something that's more renewable, and it will take a good 20. And I've been disputed with this, but I've got backing and research to back up what I say. It's a good 20 years just to get wide adoption of an alternate technology like hydrogen, which would really be the way to go. Because hydrogen is so much easier to manufacture. It just takes water, and some electricity, and you end up with a fuel that's pretty easy to handle. We've got the technology. We know what to do and how to set it up. There are places in the United States where hydrogen is for sale now and powering hydrogen vehicles, and that is the way to go. But we are way the hell out there, and it's going to take a if anything good comes of this, it might be that this is the thing that drives people to that and so, gets people looking and saying, hey, what are the alternatives, to this? And we still will need, even after this happens and after this is done, we'll still need that oil because this is where we get all our petrochemicals for manufacturing plastics, all the materials that we depend on daily. We're actually burning it all up to do all this transportation. If we go to hydrogen, we get the transport fuel, which is great because the byproduct of the combustion is water. But the neat part about it is that we still have the oil, which we can use it in the way it's supposed to be used, and we'll be consuming far less of it.
In moderation. But you're talking about a culture that is good at not facing their what their addiction is. They've had it very good, and even though they don't want to mortgage the future for their children or for their grandchildren, they're not about to work with less.
I think we're going to be forced into that.
I think we're going to be forced to, too, but if you listen to a lot of people doing the talking, I'm amazed that they're not really listening to themselves and what they're saying because their actions do not agree with their verbalizations.
I agree with you. I think that especially spokesmen both in the oil industry and in government itself are, say what the people want to hear, but then, look at what's happening. And I've just become a big proponent of, know them by their actions, forget what they're saying because it doesn't mean anything. The news services mean nothing. I have absolutely no faith in the services.
I listen to them for the weather. I think they're more accurate with what's going on in the sports world, although to me sports is not newsworthy events. But the stations seem to believe that. It's like they spent 2 weeks on that coach from Michigan who was offered a job as a coach with a 5-year contract and $30 million if he would come and coach the Cleveland basketball team, but he wasn't sure because he wanted to make sure that the star basketball player would be coming back and everything hinged on that. And they managed to milk out this whole thing for 2 weeks, and then they make it seem so important. Special news bulletin, breaking news. I thought it's this reserve, for when the president was assassinated, the stock market went belly up, wars declared, and this big news, breaking news alert.
that the coach has finally decided to stay where he is. And I'm thinking, my God, has it come to that?
That's the thing that is bothering me. I see this on internet news services now. These rolling tickers that all of a sudden they'll come up with urgent or, you know, breaking news. And, you know, it's exactly what you were saying. You know, when you and I were growing up as kids, when a news service would break in with something, it usually was something of earth-shattering importance. It really was something life-changing that we would really snap to and pay attention to. And now we're so desensitized by these inane, stupid breaking news things. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, is it just... we need to know...
It's mind-boggling. The one that really is disturbing me, though, is when the news sends a reporter out to Afghanistan or Iraq, for example, and they say, you may want to send your kids out of the room, or if you're sensitive or blah, 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 you may not want to watch this portion of the news because it's very graphic. And what does it show? Nothing worse than you see on these the video games that they sell to kids at 4 years old to play now. And it's not, I mean, I grew up during the Vietnam War, and it was a big deal when they showed you what was happening in Vietnam. It was shocking. Now you see it is prevalent, and it's in your video games, and it's in your movies, and it's in television shows. And you kind of look at it, and you're desensitized. You are no longer upset by these images of real people who are getting shot or hacked or losing their lives or losing their limb because you're so used to it. So to see the news account of what's happening in Iraq or Afghanistan, you have to remind yourself this is real as compared to some of the other things that they show you on the idiot box that are pure fabrication.
You know, and the thing that I wonder, and I've been getting this feeling from the work I do with paranormal stuff, is that these things that are coming, these shifts that are coming, are going to really, I think, shock people when they start to see these things with their own eyes for real in front of them, not at some remote thing through media where it's been, it's been okay to look at it because you're not part of it. But when they start to have to see it up close and personal, then the reality will strike home.
Well,
and
the United States has never had to see anything like that since the Civil War.
That's right.
And as you recall, you remember how the Civil War started out, don't we? People would go in their carriages with their servants or slaves following behind them, and they would spread out their picnic lunches or picnic dinners to watch the one-day battle that was projected by the South about the Civil War or the war between the states. Let's not forget that attitude, too, please.
Yeah, it's kind of like what happened when we went into Afghanistan, and, you know, same kind of thing. But it's far away. Now it's
in your own backyard. It's not happening down the street.
Well, I think it will. I mean, given the things that are going on right now with our current issues with Mexico, and it is very clear that there are more than just people who are coming in, you know, to try to work in the United States. That there are folks that are not so nice coming through from other countries, and our own intransigence in dealing with that. I think that things are going to heat up quite a bit before the feds wake up and decide to deploy troops, because there's people already being killed down there, and I think we're going to see some of this stuff. And Mexico seems to have a feeling that they own quite a bit of the United States, that they want that back.
Well, they happen to own Texas and Arizona, not to mention California and some of those other western states down there. But I know that the Mexican president blames us for our addiction to drugs, but I blame Mexico for harboring all our most wanted down in Mexico and not willingly give them up. So it's two-way street, and they used to do that back in the 1800s, if you were being chased by the federal police or the sheriffs, where did everybody go to? Oh, I'll meet you down on the sunny side of the Mexican border, and we can hang out there until things cool off.
Yep.
So things really, the more things change, the more they remain the same. I'm just afraid that with the border wars that are going down there, it's not so much, and there's been a lot of incidents and killings along that. I'm waiting to see something explode in Arizona when they shoot and kill a U.S. citizen who happens to be too Hispanic for their taste.
Well, I think it's going to get really ugly. You know, no matter what, you know, the incident, no matter which side does what, you know, the fact that they're even in the territory and having to rope off parts of the public lands just to say, you know, it's too dangerous for American citizens to come in there. And basically they're ceding the territory to, you know, these drug gangs coming through. So it's really tough. You know, I look at the Arizona state government, and I feel bad for them because they're caught between a rock and a hard spot. They're looking to the feds going, when are you going to do something? Come on, this is turning into a real problem. You need to deal with this. You know, but, I mean, they're kind of, and the feds are caught in this thing because they've basically got their hand in a trap of their own making. They can't, they've made laws that they can't easily let go of, and they're also tied to, you know, ecological laws that they've made that make it easier for these drug gangs to come through, you know, and on top of that, they got this major oil disaster going on, and their attention is shifted between these two, you know, crises, if you will. So I don't know, but, you know, I really think the paranormal, the side of the stuff that's going on with the paranormal world and the things that you're talking about with the earth in reaction to some of this stuff going on, I think that's, there's some wisdom there because, I do think the earth fights back. I think there are feedback mechanisms at play, and that Gaia, you know, which is, you know, kind of the name that is euphemistically given to, you know, the planet, the intelligence part of this world, does occasionally, you know, react in a way that would kind of push people, you know, put people's, it would just surprise them. Let's just say it that way. It would surprise them that might be a possibility.
Well, you know, there's a new book out that somebody gave to my husband to read, and it's written by a scientist. And he is talking about the symbolic, I can't pronounce it. Anyway, it begins with an S, relation between plants and people, and that the fact that plants have used people just as much as people has used the plants in order to propagate them and to of course, eat them and stuff, and then the plants, for their part, have used man in order to get to where they needed to go, seeding every place in the United States and being made available and turned into different varieties and things by that with skin graft, you know, by wood grafting of the different limbs and everything. And I'm just wondering if it's more than just that, but the different parts of the ecology itself that is beginning to use man against what man is doing. For example, it's common knowledge that bushes and trees and plants have roots that keep the ground from shifting beneath your feet because they're holding the soil in place. But if you get rid of those trees, bushes, and plants that no longer have their roots going down deep into soil, then you don't have anything keeping that part of the land intact. And so when there is torrential rain or storms, the first thing to go is the soil because it just breaks up from underneath whatever is sitting on top of it and goes right into a raging pool or river or stream or whatever. And you keep on seeing a lot of that, of course, happening in California, but you see a lot of it now happening on the beaches. And if all, for example, all the tributaries and all the marshes and some of the breeding grounds for a lot of these fish and turtles and birds that are coming inland are destroyed, for example, by the oil, then you're not going to have that land, even marshy land, available anymore for it to be a buffer between you and
what's happening in the ocean, for example, because a lot of that land is also used as buffers by the people to keep
it's
their
funny.
Land from being washed away by the hurricanes.
It's so funny. I watched the Colorado River for quite a long time. And when the Colorado at one time used to flow all the way down into Mexico and ran right out into the ocean, it was just an effect of building. All that sediment was carried down into Mexico and created farmland and rich soil and rich beaches and things like that all the way down there. And we've basically now taken the Colorado and drained it dry. Every last drop is actually, there was a point at which there was so many programs for different groups that were trying to use part of the Colorado. They were actually using more water than was available.
Yeah.
And it had to be looked at as a whole system. And that's the point that I look at, because I read a very interesting article which talked about the fact that there's silt buildup now caused by all this control of the water, and it's not being the violence of the water taking it down, downstream like it should be doing. It's just building up, and so some experimental programs were run to open up the Colorado a little bit to see and flush it and see if that would work. And sure enough, it did. And sandbanks built up, and old beaches that used had been there, that basically had moved away. Came back, and things that were, it was surprising to everybody how quickly the river snapped back to what it was supposed to be. But there were people who were fighting it, going, no, you can't do that. We need the water. And
when you can't use the water, if the water is not there for you to use, most of Las Vegas, their water comes from the Colorado River. And yet the underwater water reserves that keep the crops in the western part of the United States watered, where they draw the water from to irrigate it with, they're drying up as well, that land water. It's not as prevalent as it was. In fact, I started noticing about 10 years ago that it's going to become more and more difficult and more expensive to bring water in to keep the crops that are planted in the western part of the USA watered, because those underground water reservoirs are disappearing at a very quick rate.
Now, it's funny. I see us almost paralleling some of the old stories about Atlantis. And in some ways, and some people, and I'm still on the fence with Atlantis in terms of a whole continent disappearing, because I'm a big believer in, the science of, geophysics and the things that I know about how the planet works. But it does make sense that there was, in the Mediterranean, there was an island that actually blew up that would have matched much of what Atlantis was about. But those people were rumored to be pretty advanced technically and had commanded some amazing things. And I just think that we're kind of following down the same road they are, and we run the risk of kind of a massive meltdown of the whole culture. Now, the Mayan people, I think, had observations about this. And, and I know you did some research on this. I'm doing a lead in here, see.
I noticed that. I thought, gee, isn't that, that's really smooth. Really smooth, John. Take it away.
I had to be obvious about it. But, it does make sense to relate it to current day.
Mayan are a good example, and so are the people on Easter Island. Have you ever read some of the things about Easter Island? Some of the things is said it was a very lush, wooded island when it started, and by the time its race disappeared, they were resorted to cannibalism, and because there were no trees left, there was nothing left, and they sort of fed upon themselves. And I think that's what we're doing in terms of our industrialization, is that
we have not learned that every source has a finite limit. And what took millions of years to forge is now being devoured within 1,000, 2,000 years, which is nothing on the spectrum of evolution. Now, the Mayan and the Inca and the Aztec, some of it was because of the conquistadors, but some of it was the inroads to their civilization was already deteriorating because of not having enough water and not being able to feed their population.
It's just so these, basically, we're just repeating the sins of the past, but on a much larger scale.
But on a larger scale, and our sins of the past is one of them that because we have been so negligent in how we've allocated the resources, that we really don't have the control and authority over the third world countries who want to attain the same level of opulence that we are on.
Yeah, I think
it's
just going to happen.
It's just going to happen. And I lived off the land, homesteaded for many years before I became normal again. And I still have a lot of those skills, as does my husband. But the problem is that the answer isn't everybody starting living off the land and raising their vegetables or becoming vegetarians, because to be utterly frank, there's just not enough land to sustain everybody.
You know, that's the thing that I've worked my entire life in the spacecraft business, and we're at a stage now with our development as a species that the notion of us actually moving off world and being able to colonize a place like Mars is not far-fetched at all. And the technology is going to be available in the next 100 years to actually transform Mars into actually a fairly livable world. Because Mars, a lot of people don't realize the discoveries with Spirit and, all the different probes that have gone there, and Opportunity. Yeah, the other probe is Opportunity. They found that water had existed on Mars, and the real shocker is that the water is still there. Quite a bit of it went underground, and Mars is a world waiting, just on the edge of being brought back to life. It's kind of like waiting for us. And all we have to do is come in and warm it up a little bit, and the technology will be there to basically terraform that world into some place to go. And that's the thing that kills me is space is looked on as this big unnecessary expense, and it really doesn't cost that much for us to go out there. And I do think that, you're right, there are too many of us, and I do think that it would be sensible to move out into the solar system. And the solar system will do its best to prune us, keep us in check, because it's a hostile environment out there. But, if we don't do anything, we're going to make it down here, make it worse on ourselves, because there are too many of us. I mean, we're closing in on 10 billion people here in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think it can sustain that. I just don't.
Most of them are coming out of the third world countries.
Yeah.
Out of India, China, Africa. Of course, Africa is the only continent, but even so, there's a lot of people there. So let's go back to the Mayan Indians.
Yep.
Since we were going to talk about the Mayan, and we'll leave the space travel one for another day, okay?
You got it.
Because I don't think there's any paranormal going on up on Mars at the moment.
Actually,
I think that if there is, it's an alien form of paranormal.
Exactly.
So,
okay. So what were you, now when you emailed me, you said that you had been reading up on Mayan culture and some Mayan things. So let's start off with what you've learned.
Well, I
one of the things I've learned is that they're a very complex and complicated society, that they actually took land that was inhospitable and turned it into lush, breathing gardens in which they grew their food. And they did that by redirecting the water that, A, did come down from the mountains, but B, the water that was in the ground itself. They redirected its flow. And they took islands and created like floating islands of where they tended gardens. And they had water distributed between these islands of growing things. Plus, they also had water running throughout the whole city.
That's pretty good.
They were keeping themselves clean that way, apparently, as well. They would gather water into pools in which people could bathe themselves. They were creating water where people made their water, so to speak. And they were apparently a very ingenious civilization when it came to creating something out of nothing. And I did not know that. I had no knowledge that they had actually taken dry earth and cultivated it with different types of plants to make the soil fertile and then start planting their food on it.
Now, it's funny. They seem to have mastered technologies, and that's an amazing thing to do with water, the way they did it, because the only other culture that was doing that would have been the Romans with their aqueduct technology, and that Roman technology is actually kind of pale in comparison to what the Incans and Mayans did with their developments. I mean,
there was a civilization in India who did the same thing with their water, and they made it very complex, but they used the natural draw of the water going up and going down. And it was pretty sophisticated in which they used the water, because it was just not on one level. They had it on multi-levels, which makes you wonder.
Yeah, their whole approach was the sustainability in a lot of ways. I mean, despite the fact that they ultimately didn't keep within their bounds, you know, the fact that they were doing these things and using the natural materials at hand in the way they did, and it's just amazing. And the thing that I've seen repeatedly said is that even we would have a hard time doing some of the things they did, even now.
I think it's because they were, for all their hideousness and some of their culture and their rights, they were a lot closer to nature than we are. They did not remove themselves totally from it, because they also had tears of gardens, which were also watered along that irrigation method, and they would have flowering plants and everything. So I think, and apparently their knowledge of the heavens and of religion in terms of the heavens was quite sophisticated in terms of what we went through. I mean, we didn't really start doing anything until 1400s, 1500s with all the explorers from Spain and Portugal. A lot of these folks had already figured out all the major constellations and had figured out the astronomical math that went along with the shapes of the stars and the planets and when would be a good time for them to do certain types of observations. The way a lot of their temples were built and set up to everything that Stonehenge did, plus more.
You know, it's funny because there was, I saw references recently to the fact that these various cultures spread across all over the world, including, you know, the Mayan and Incan cultures, had a pretty interesting way of building some of their temples, which always seemed to revolve around the constellation Orion. And you see this same pattern repeated with these cultures that made superstructures you know, like the pyramids, you know, and pyramid structures seem to show up all over the world. And you get to wondering, you know, gee, did they? I really began to believe that there was more travel across the continents than anybody ever believed, and that there was actually oceanic travel and trade going on that no one really can appreciate. You know, how much was really happening on the planet way before, you know, history, you know, any written history was going on. So I do think that there was some cross pollination going on. You know, but it's so interesting to see the astronomical stuff like you're talking about, because you know for the audience, it's just, you know, we know that the year, I'll just put it this way, we know that the average year right now is 365.2422 days. That's what the year is. The Mayans had it down to 365.2420 days. And it was roughly right about that that length at their time. They had it right on the money.
Yeah.
That's how sophisticated their calculations were. So what they had done is they rivaled our technology, our best technologies now, and they did it with a system of tying ropes and knots and just careful observation and the simplest tools, which proved to be every bit as good as what we use now.
Well, when you take a look and see where their technology took them, in the end, it still failed them. And it's failing us as well. I think that you can have too much technology where you depend on it to such a degree that you believe it can solve all your problems. And I think that's where we are right now when if you take a step back and take a good look, you can see that with our sophistication of our tools and techniques, there are still certain things that we have not learned how to master.
I would agree with you.
The oil, Gulf oil problem. Because with all the sophisticated equipment, they have come in to try tapping it and capping it, none of it's worked. Yeah, it's difficult 4 miles down, but I think if it was in space, we'd probably have the same problem up there that we're having down, being so far below the water level. I just think that there are some things that are not meant to work as well as one man actually has their hand on it and doing it themselves.
I agree with that. I think that it's funny because, you know, when you see a technological civilization hitting the limit of what they can do, for example, the Roman Empire eventually just flat played out and fell, and the Dark Ages ensued. And yet, when we call it the Dark Ages, whose Dark Ages was that? You know, because if you look at what happened afterwards, there was actually a period of remarkable freedom that went on, and people were free of this idea of, quote, the state for some time, and they were able to kind of go off and do what they really wanted without a lot of interference. And there were city-states, and there was a negative side to it. There was the violence. There was the loss of you know, a great deal of knowledge, but people still survived it somehow, and you know, they had lives, and they kept going. And I think that's what happened in, you know, when the Mayan and the Incan cultures kind of went the way they did afterwards, the people just dispersed and went back to a more simple way of life. And only now are just now, you know, beginning to understand what came before, you know. I mean, those traditions survived and the stories survived, but, you know, they just didn't have the organization. And it's only now that the government's, you know, in place or there that they have some identity. But I just think that cultures have a lifetime, and you know, and just as what we are doing, you know, this idea of a world government, which is constantly being harped about, and the UN is sitting there, man, you know, all their machinations trying to get everybody together, and we're all lined up, we're all one, we're one Earth now, and it can never work. It just you know, I just don't think it will ever work.
And the technology, because people don't understand, in utopia, there's only one person in power. And that if you're going to have a utopia and everybody's going to work together and truly be happy together, well, there are certain laws that people inevitably have to obey and have to inevitably be enforced. And trust me, if you stick out or you're eccentric or eclectic or an outsider like I am, they don't want you there.
That's right.
They don't want you there. They want everybody to be of the same mind, of the same level, of the same station, except for the person, of course, who's sitting on top. They don't want somebody like me because I would agitate the people and I'd be considered dangerous.
Well, that's exactly what happened during the Cultural Revolution, and they went in and started killing off all the intellectuals.
Yep.
And
they're the first to go.
It's funny. I mean, would you say that in the Mayan and Incan cultures, that's a lot of the reason for the bloodshed and the religious violence that took place, you know, when they were cutting people's hearts up?
I think if you take a look at a lot of the ancient civilizations, that is usually the priest class that holds a lot of power and the soldier, the warrior class. I mean, if you take a look at some of the vintage Star Wars and vintage Star Trek, who's in control? The military, not the government. Oh, they have a president, but I don't think he wields that much power. It's the military who pretty much decides what's going on. And more importantly, if you look at any of the type of science fiction that has been written in the last 200 years, you really don't hear the word republic or democracy. There's always a king or a queen or a princess or the military around, but you don't hear about a republic or a democracy.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny. You hear a lot about these groups that behind the scenes that run things, and I've actually heard that there is still, quote, a king of the earth. There's actually this notion of of the 200 families who literally run things and drive the government institutions that are all out there that make all of their empires work. And, you know, it's something that's just been with us. It's part of the human dynamic that, if you look back at these older cultures, they really had the same problem. It's just that now that we've got all these extra, tools and technologies, I don't know, we just make it worse every time we, quote, improve on things. And I just really believe that the answer is fewer people on the planet or we move out. You know, we move through whatever means. We get it so we can spread out a bit. But we make the problem bigger even when we do that. But at the same time, I'm glad to be alive as a person. I don't know about you, but at the individual level, I think I'm okay. Yeah, it's just when we're in such huge numbers, we create a lot of problems for ourselves.
I think that human nature, being what it is, there's always going to be somebody or somebodies who think they're better than everybody else, and they should be treated better than everybody else, which means they get the better cuts of meat, they get all the alcohol they can consume, all the gasoline their SUV tanks can take, and there's always somebody who's going to be put on the bottom so that the work that the people who feel like they ought to be adored from afar won't do. And I just don't think you're ever going to wipe out that type of existence. Now, in the paranormal, for example, and I find this very, very interesting, you really don't find, or I haven't seen, or whatever, discovered a hierarchy among the people who still walk around. The ones that go to heaven, and I know there are a few who drop down to, Mother Earth, into the fiery bowels or whatever. But you don't really find a ghost saying to another ghost, well, I'm better than you are, so you have to fall down and kiss my ghostly toes.
Yeah, you're right.
I haven't found that. I mean, they're evil ghosts, and there are other, and they're good ghosts and in-between ghosts, because a ghost is only as good as who they were when they were alive. But I think that's the only place so far
that I haven't run into a king ghost or a duke ghost or a shining knight in shining white mist armor ghost who demand that you bring them a tribute of whatever because they are higher up on the archy as a ghost than anybody else. I think it's the one place where everybody is pretty much the same.
You know, and that's I find that encouraging, you know, and I've always felt there was a true, you know, democracy or republic kind of feeling to that. It's been like the unsaid thing, but, you know, it's the first time it's really come to my mind the way you said that. Honestly, with all the cases I've been on, I have never, ever seen any ego-driven thing like what you're talking about. It happens here on this side. They seem to be much more concerned with our development and much more concerned about us and the way we live our lives and the lessons we're learning. So it's just, I don't know. I just wonder what it was like for, you know, these other cultures in the past. I'm sure that they saw they saw it the same way.
I know that the Mayans revered their dead. Lots of times they had mummies that they considered still alive, and they would go back and consult them that one time of year and set them up and wine and dine them. But nothing that I have seen in any of the literature I've looked at shows where a ghost of a former Mayan king demanded that their warrior class or their priest class or even the common masses who went out into the fields and work had to bow down to them or treat them any differently. Now, they may do that over in, you know, Europe. I haven't met any European ghosts. I've never been over to Europe, so there's no reason why I should have anything to do with them. You know, they don't come drifting over to my side of the pond, that's for sure. But even from what I see on... I'm so bad these days.
I'm liking it. Keep going.
It's like ever since I had my left eye had cataract surgery on it, some really strange things have been happening to me. And I have my right eye is going to be operated on Wednesday, so I can't wait for the weirdness to catch up with both eyes, as it were. But I haven't found in any literature where there have been any ghosts of the royalty demanding that their dead courtiers, you know, pay homage to them. So I just think that death is a great equalizer, and when you're dead, you're dead, unless you're sort of walking around and making trouble. But that there's nothing, it's not in tears, and there's no dictatorships or anything else like that. And some people are just truly dead. They don't need to stick around or have no desire to stick around.
Do you think that... this is something that's been on my mind recently. I've been looking at the nature of ghosts I've encountered in the field. And, you know, out here in Northern California where I'm at, I run into a lot of gold rush ghosts. So I'm kind of, you know, and I love them to death. They're great people, and I've run into some amazing spirits out here. But I'm trying to look for something new, and I'm looking at the older Indian cultures, and I'm going to start going to some of the older Indian sites and see if they're still around. And so my question, you know, to you, just to see what your thoughts are on this, is, you know, Indian and Mayan, you know, or Incan and Mayan culture, do you feel that around some of those sites, some of those older spirits are still there, maybe guarding the place, or who come back in remembrance and maybe interact with aware people?
I think they are. I think that there have been too many people who have felt things when they go out to the different ruins and have felt a spot be warm or a spot be cold or get their shivers because it feels like somebody just walked over my grave, and incidentally, I had that feeling the other day. Oh, was that just totally... But I think something remains there. I don't think it's totally lose it. I know that when I was a teen, we had some work being done in the house, and a carpenter's helper dropped dead in our sunroom. my parents never used that room again because they felt uncomfortable sitting in it. And you would go and sit down, and after a couple of minutes, you didn't want to stay in that room because it felt like somebody else was in that room and had taken it over as his spot, as his space. And I know, too, that when when somebody crowds your inner space, you don't like it. You kind of bristle. And when you went into that room, you would almost feel like somebody was bristling there.
Huh. And you think the same thing would be the case then in some of these ancient sites, you know, some of these places?
I would think so. I mean, I went to see Gettysburg, 10, 15 years ago? And especially around the unknown graves where all the men from both sides were just all kind of thrown into a pile and the dirt was thrown over them and the headstone was put up and said mass grave of unknown soldiers. I felt that there was a lot of tension down there.
That's the universal thing I keep hearing about Gettysburg, and one of these days when I can actually travel out that way, I would like to see it for myself. But you're saying that exactly.
I don't know what's fighting down there, because the Union and the rebels are all buried together in one common grave, but there's a great deal of tension. And if I could say this, I would say that the hairs on my arms would definitely stand up as if somebody was taking a magnet, you know, and rubbing it up and down my arm type thing. So I really think there is a residue among the Mayans. I have never been there. I can't because I'm allergic to the sun and warm climates, and so and that takes out two-thirds of the world for me. But when I look at some of the pictures, I get some very eerie twinges.
It's funny.
I am crowding their space, and they don't like it.
When I was in Sedona here back in 2005, same kind of thing happened to me going into some of the canyons out there, and there was just this feeling of you were kind of in someone's space, and they didn't like that. And you know, and it's funny. I've even had on cases where we've gone in Bodie, California. We're actually going to be going there again here. GRI's taken off to reinvestigate it back in, in July 30th. We're going to be, our team's going out there. And when we were there last year, it was this, we got constant EVPs complaining about us, teasing the ghost. And I literally have this musical sounding EVP, you know, stop teasing the ghosts. And they were real concerned about that, and yet we were being very respectful, you know, because, you know, frankly, I don't allow at all any, antagonism or belittling to go on. It's you know, we come from a different place when we investigate.
I think maybe it's because you're just there. They wouldn't invite you, and they don't feel like you should be there. It's like, they tell you that two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time without some kind of tragic consequence, like you just wrecked yourself or something. And I kind of feel that it's the same way with the ghosts, that you and they cannot occupy the same space without somebody getting hurt or stepped on. And I know that with experiments that I've done and have been done with other people, that if you put somebody against the wall and then you have somebody keep on approaching them until they're almost leering your face, the one who's against the wall has no place to go, so they push out. And I think that's what it is for the ghosts. They
it's
have
funny,
no place to go, so they push back. And when they push back, you feel it in different ways.
It's funny. We had such a number of experiences. I actually, because occasionally I'm clairaudient, and I did hear a few things out there, but not often is the case that I actually see something. And what was funny is I was actually on in the upper part of Bodie, up on a major hill that where the main mine was, the gold mine. And I actually watched a spirit run right by me, and I could tell it was a woman. And she ran right past me, and I got an EVP at that exact moment. And what it, you know, and I was looking for the church, and I mentioned it. You know, I was calling out to one of the other investigators, saying, you know, hey, come, check out the church. And I was trying to scan for it, and that's exactly the moment when that spirit ran right by me. And when we analyzed EVP, she says, look to the citadel. And when I went back and looked at the exact spot through the photographs I'd been taking, that at that exact moment, it was, you know, off to the left. It was exactly, you know, the way this spirit had told me. But, you know, the point I'm making is some of them seem to feel that way. It's, you know, the thing I find with spirits is it's a continuum. Some are real ticked off you're there. Others are not so ticked off. They're more friendly about it if you're friendly to them. And that seemed to be the thing. There was like when we got to Bodie, we were just treated, probably for the first hour, they were meaner than hell to us. And then as you look at the EVPs over time, when they saw that we weren't the kind that were going to be pushy, their attitude improved. So, you know, I think good relations go a long way, you know, especially when you revisit and you re-identify yourself and say, hey, we're here. And I'm a big believer in gifts with ghosts. We take whiskey. It's a big thing out here in the West.
Vermouth is very good, too.
What's that?
Vermouth.
Vermouth?
Vermouth.
Really? I'll have to remember
apparently,
that.
Apparently, it's very good in cooking because it can disguise itself and act as different. It changes the flavoring of whatever you're eating.
Yeah.
And you may want to try that as well.
Well, you know, it really seems to get a lot of friends when you go to some of these older mining camp types. You know, that was a big thing for them. So, you know, I wonder what the Incans would have liked in the Mayan. I mean,
fermented drink that they gave their captives that rendered them not incoherent. They were, as like a patient today, giving something to dull the pain, but you're awake during the surgery type thing. For example, when they were doing my cataract surgery on my left eye, they gave me some kind of goo on my eye that deadened the nerves. I didn't feel anything, but I was awake during the whole surgery. And apparently the Mayan prepared a drink like that as well from one of the plants. I mean, I can give you the official name next time we talk. And they would give their people this, or the kids, whoever they were using as sacrifices. And what it was, they wouldn't feel anything, but they'd be aware of what was going on around them.
So when they were cutting their hearts out, they weren't feeling it?
Apparently not. But
oh,
they were alive.
God. Oh, just, I
don't
know.
You know.
Yeah, I know. But the psychic, you know.
I think that for them, I mean, think about the sacrifices that the Christians and all the other religions used to prepare for their God. Sometimes they didn't outright kill the sacrificial victim either. They did various and sundry things to offer the blood or whatever to their God. So, I mean, and maybe they knew a way of putting incisions in the person's chest where they could take out things and not bother them. I know in the writings that I was studying from the Spanish who left diaries behind from some of the soldiers, warriors, that they would tell you they disemboweled people and the warriors would run around with their entrails in their hands and go on fighting.
Yeah, it just...
And their, you know, their lower and their upper intestine apparently, which has just all this stuff that pops out of you when the skin is not... Oh, if there's anybody faint or you feel this material is too graphic for your ears, now's a good time to pull out. Okay, I got that off my chest. Now, apparently with the intestines are so long and so much of it coiled inside of you that a lot of the warriors would just kind of hold it in one hand and keep on fighting with the other.
And they were obviously drugged up, so they were able to they considered it an honor to die that way.
And they considered it an honor to die that way. Absolutely.
That had to leave a hell of a psychic imprint in these areas where these things happened. I mean, I would lay dollars to donuts that there would be, just like you said before, there would be some pretty powerful impressions that would come through them. Have you been to any of these places?
I have not been to any of these Indian places, but I've seen a lot of the different memories that they have discovered among these places and the documentaries and Nat Geo, and I know that when I go on to the sites and I stare at the pictures, or sometimes I put my hand on the picture, you get, even pictures can tell you things because they're not really dead.
Yeah.
Laugh at me. I'm so happy. I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day, and they just said, oh, poor Lillian, she's really over the edge now. And I'm going, poor Lillian, nothing.
Well, that's what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, good psychics have the ability to look even at a photograph, which it just connects you right to the source, you know, of what the subject matter was, and will bring that through. So I see no difficulty with that at all. I mean, you're dealing with in old magic, the notion of representing your victim, if you will, or someone you're trying to heal with a poppet or some representation of them to connect you to them is an old concept. So the idea that a photograph would convey information to you is not a problem at all. You know, for me at least, I just think because it's a quantum universe, you know, and these things connect you in ways that we still don't understand yet.
Well, if you believe what the Mayans did and the Incas did as well, is that we are on a great journey, but we're not in the real world. We're in a duplicate copy of the real world, and we have yet to enter the real world. But the real world runs concurrently with this dreamlike stage in which we're in now.
So we are the dead, according to them.
Yes. We have not... We're not alive yet. We're still in our dead stage. Something to think about,
Yeah, I've heard this subject brought up before, and I actually can get behind that. I can get behind that. I do think that there's a truth to that because, we're the ones that are removed from reality. You know, if you really, when we finally pass, we get to see what the real deal is. You know, and find out how disconnected we really were. So we're walking around in limited state.
We're in a grub state, I think. We haven't evolved beyond the grub. And for us to go beyond the grub stage, we need to walk from this world into the real world. And the real world, for some people get into the real world a lot easier or a lot sooner than others do, while others never really make it into the real world, which kind of makes you wonder about what is so good about this world.
I have a faith in the creator of all things, that there was a very noble purpose for all this. You know, there's a reason we're here. You know, and I enjoy living. You know, I really think that the fact that I'm here doing this mission and doing what I do, it's a great thing. You know, and when it comes my time, and I finally get to see the other side and do whatever this great mystery is that I've been not able to see up to that point, I can feel good about it, and I have a faith in the goodness of all this intent of it, and I think it's necessary that we are here. It's just, parts of it are really sucky, you know?
Well, there are parts of it in which you don't want to have to face, but in order for you to pass through to the next stage of your own personal evolution, you need to face it and to walk through it. And I know, for me, that's how I feel, that there are many stages in my life, and at 59, I've gone through a lot of them now, and each one brings me to a higher level and is better than the last one.
I have no desire to come back and be reborn again or get a second chance. I think that you are provided with a lot of chances for every level that you graduate and go on to the plane. And that's how I look at it. I think the only thing that I really think is a bummer, and my husband agrees, is that we won't know what comes after. We won't see what's going to happen once we leave the picture.
I don't know. I based on what I see with the ITC work, you know, where I bring spirits through here on air and do that, I do think they see quite a bit, and that they are able to communicate with us and are very aware of what we're doing. I've had family members come through. I do private readings, you know, working with myself. You know, we call it soul streaming here, because it just seems to be that, you know, they're able to connect to our electronics so easy. It's not even a problem for them.
In my second book that I'm writing on anime, I talk a lot about their energies and the different color energy that the different characters emit.
I think that when it is your time, I think you will be aware. I think you'll be, you'll see it from maybe a different perspective than you would ever believe you would. But I do think that you'll be aware of it. It's funny. My grandfather, who I don't even remember, my grandfather Almada, famous neurosurgeon. And, you know, I really don't remember a single thing about him, but he came through totally thrilled with what I'm doing. And says, I'm so excited with what you're doing. And he's really talking to me, and encouraging me to go on, because he's, you know, he was an accomplished scientist, and he's, you know, seeing what's being done here and totally approves of it. So I do think they connect in a way that's, and have a continuity and connection with us that goes on and on.
Now
it's just, go ahead.
I was going to say, my mother saw, after my grandfather died, my mother saw her father a lot, and he would always come and stand at the edge of her bed, you know, beseeching her to come over, and she would say, no, 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 and she finally, of course, in the 80s, she finally did. But she saw him all her life, and they had a very, very deep connection. And I find it interesting that nobody from my family has visited me at all.
You know, it's funny. My grandmother passed, who I was so close to, Grandmother Stanley, and she, when she left, I only had one visitation from her, and it was only when I got into this work, doing the things I'm doing, that she came through a couple of times, and she was just right there, you know, absolutely no doubt. I just think that it's just a matter of the technology you use, that there, now that there are tools available, you can literally, quote, pick up the phone, you know, and call them, and they will come through. I do think that's possible.
Teach me, because I got to tell you, nobody who's passed away in my family has come to talk to me or to say, you know, well, Lillian, you really surprised us. You've gone a lot further than we thought you would. Not a sound.
I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. In the coming week, how about I give you a call, and I will do a session for you, and we'll see what we come up with.
Okay.
You up for that?
Oh, sure. Just not on Wednesday. Okay. Wednesday's when I have my other eye operated on, and anything goes on Wednesday.
It's funny. I'm going to be in the same boat. I have to. And Kathy, by the way, Kathy, who's listening in, I won't be able to be around Wednesday and possibly Thursday. I may have to uproot my show, because I've got my father going in for gallbladder surgery, and he will be an overnight case because of his medical conditions. So it's surgery day for both of us.
Oh, yeah, it really is. It really is. And I've got to tell people that getting cataract surgery is a real trip. Especially for me. First of all, they found something else wrong after they did the surgery, and if they had known about it, they wouldn't have done their surgery. But the second thing is now it's very fleeting stuff, but every now and then I see someone flip by that's just within my peripheral, but isn't quite all there, and it's very, very startling. So I just want to warn you, if you're thinking of getting cataract surgery and you get a visit like that, not to get it, you know, don't let it freak you out too much. Because the first time it happened to me, I stopped what I was doing and kind of gripped the tape and went, whoa.
So you're seeing spirits is what you're saying?
I think so, yeah. It's really quick. It's really, really quick. It's right outside my peripheral. And the first time it happened, it really, really shocked the hell out of me. I wasn't expecting anything.
Well, I've seen them my whole life, so it won't bother me. But I can tell you, my dad's got cataracts, and when he's, should there be enough time, he'll end up with the surgery. And I think that will be an eye opener for him.
I think it will be, because I was talking to my doctor about it, and they said, oh, well, you know, they're just floaters, and they'll go away, and loo-ba-boo, and don't worry about it, this is normal. And I said, really? And I said, this is how my floaters are going. And she kind of looked at me, and she re-examined my eye again, and she looked at it and says, well, it's just floaters. And then she repeated herself two or three times. So I don't know. You know, when they keep on taking out their instrument and you have to put your chin on that little ledge and they keep having the bright lights going into your eyes after you tell something and you ask them, well, did you find anything? No, we don't understand, but don't go away. And I'm going, I don't think so. But it's I find it fascinating.
I think, given your intuitive abilities that are already there, it just is augmenting them. It's actually, I would look at it as a gift, as part of the whole thing.
Well, I have to tell you, it's kind of, it just kind of takes your breath away every time it happens. It's because there's no preparation for it. It just kind of shows, and it's just enough to get a glimpse of it, but not... You're not getting a full body spectre or anything like it. It comes and it goes real, real, real fast. It's kind of like somebody sliding through the room. You won't be able to see me because I know you can't really see me. One eye is fixed, one eye isn't. I can't wear my glasses because my glasses were made for my eyes before I had the surgery. So, and the eye doctor says to me, well, you know, she says some days you have 20/20 vision and other days you don't. And she says it just depends on what's going on with you on that particular day of how your retina works. She says, we don't get too many people like that. And I felt like saying, oh, you mean odd?
Oh, God.
But I she's a nice, earnest young eye doctor, so I don't want to alarm her too much. But I just said, okay, because... It was just really odd. I mean, she just kept on examining that one eye three or four times, and she put more and more drops in and stuff like that, and she says, how am I doing? And I said, And I felt like saying, well, what's really happening is the thing is telling me to tell you to stop putting those nasty drops in.
It's funny because my doctor knows I'm paranormally aware, and we've had some pretty interesting conversations, and she's pretty open-minded. You know, and I think you're going to find that and especially for the audience out there too, you'll find that doctors are a lot more aware than you think. If you just open up a little bit with them, some of them will look at you like you're a kook. But
this one kind of looks like it's going to be okay, Miss Jacobson. That's my married name. You know, you just need to relax and understand it takes a few weeks for all this to work its way through. But I guarantee you that by September you should be all well and won't have any of these problems. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that's what they said about the voices too. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
You know what's funny is the fact that you're seeing it in the corner of your eyes.
Yeah.
The corner of your, the side vision that you have is, the peripheral vision is the black and white cones of the eye. And they are more sensitive to ultraviolet radiation. And it turns, so you are literally seeing a little further out. And I would be curious to know what the, with regard to the lens that they put in, if this is an artificial lens, which I take it that that's what it is.
Yeah, I have a little card now saying that I'm bionic in my left eye.
So the bottom line is the type of wavelengths that lens is letting through may be letting a little more through. And it's funny because we just ordered we just ordered a piece of equipment called a full spectrum video camera, and I just got word that it's in shipment now, so I should have it the next day, you know, day to 5 days, and that gives you the ability to see spirits in the ultraviolet. They seem to be the bottom line is there's a lot of good evidence coming out that you can see them at that particular frequency. So, and they make their appearance known. But those of us in the business that do see them out of the corner of the eye, we see them and acknowledge it. I think that everybody sees them. It just doesn't compute. But, here you are. You've actually had a modification to the eye, and it's actually increased that ability. You're a little more sensitive to it. You could actually work with that and develop that. And just,
well,
you know,
who do I
just,
go to?
Pardon me?
Who do I go to? Oh, I'm serious.
Who do you?
I'm finding that with the second book that I'm writing, and I also wrote a vampire novel as well that's set in Central America. And finding things that I'm writing about that I have no previous knowledge of, but when I do my research, it's like I'm hitting it squarely on the button every single time now, which I find a little bit eerie. Because I think I'm just using my imagination, and yet when I go in to do some more investigated research on it just to make sure that I'm saying it the right way or I'm presenting it the right way and stuff, what I thought was my imagination actually is stuff that happens, and yet I have no knowledge of that whatever at all.
Actually, you know, as an intuitive, as a psychic, you know, medium, you have that connection all the time. And, you know, especially with the, you know, people who are creative, it just sort of pops into your head. I mean, I wrote a very well-known piece of software. I won't go into it because of what it does, but let's just say it's well-known in the industry I'm in. And I swear to God, I mean, it was 1998. I had this wild idea, came out of nowhere, that I could do this. And I wrote this thing, and everybody told me I was crazy and it would never work. Well, it's turned into an institution for the company. And it's just done a fabulous job, you know. And it's on the tail end of its lifetime now, you know, because, I've taken about it as far as I want to go with it because I'm kind of getting tired of it. But, bottom line is intuitive, flashes like this and idea implantation, I think, is part of the order of this whole thing, you know, especially when your guides are working with you, and if you're close to that and you're able to internalize those things quick, you know, fairly well and have your, what I guess you would call the muse, are able to work with that and believe in that. It does seem to be just something coming out of nowhere, you know. And you, in your case, you're doing a great job with it. I think you're, it's a talent.
Well, thank you. I think I need to develop it, and I really don't know where to go to develop it. I know my husband says, "And how much longer are you going to be writing this paranormal series?" And I said, "Why?" And he says, "Well, you know, he's a scientist, and he doesn't believe in these kind of things. He belongs to Skeptical Inquirer and all that other stuff." And he says it makes him very uncomfortable to believe that I believe in these kind of things. And I said, you know, when you married me, we did not exchange traditional vows, and so you're just going to have to accept it, and we'll just put it back in its little box and not discuss it again.
I don't think
I do have a different view on life than he does, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why we're, you know, so good together, is that we are opposite in a lot of things, but we're also so much alike that it is freaky.
You know, it's funny. I I've got the father who is just so anti everything paranormal. Same thing, you know, and here I am kind of, when he gets his cataract surgery, I think he's going to get a surprise. But
I think he's freaked out because I don't know whether it's because you have now an artificial something or, as I say, I'm partially bionic, and by the time I have my other eye done, I'll be totally bionic with my eyes. But I think that it's kind of like opening a window. And if you have an inquiring, curious mind, and you're not satisfied with the type of explanations that you've been given since you're a child, then you can open the door further. So I think a lot of it kind of depends on how he looks at what happens with after his eyes and stuff. Because I can now understand, well, now my eyes are opened. And before I thought, well, what a silly thing to say. Of course your eyes are open. How else are you going to see things? But I think there's a depth to it, meaning that you are really, truly seeing for the first time as compared to just seeing for the first time. It's the, kind of like the difference between listening and hearing. You hear noise, but you discern with listening.
Well, you know, I really think in your case, you talk about the training. You're doing everything by absolutely beautifully. I mean, you're writing the books. I see the paranormal as a lifetime thing for me. I mean, I've lived with it my whole life, and it's every day for me. I mean, things happen that other people would think are remarkable, and I look at it and go, yeah, been there, done that, but nice of you to show yourself to me, and, you know, we'll go on. But, you know, in your case, I think that if you just trust the universe is going to do the things it needs to hook you up with the right people, you know, for example, this ITC work, I'm going to work with you here in the, you know, and it could be a couple of weeks.
Right.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing that the development that, you know, that other people will come to you and show you some things, and it'll open your eyes a little more and open your mind in some new directions that maybe you hadn't considered. And just keep doing that. You know, because the right people are going to show up. And that listening to this show, I mean, you know, we got a great audience here, and they know your website now, and some of them will probably be in contact with you.
That would be
so
very,
you know,
there's
yeah,
a lot of interest.
So,
I'm in the process of redoing my website, so it's going to be a little bit different than it was.
Are you still doing the radio show?
I own the station, yes.
Oh.
I own the station. And I'm expanding in to include more things. I'm going more into multimedia, so I'll be running the radio station plus doing multimedia with audio and video. I plan to put a web TV on the new website. I plan to use an interactive magazine to get people involved with what I'm doing on the website. So that's coming along very well. I got my first sponsor, so I'm tickled pink about that. And then I have an idea to start up a nonprofit. I just have to figure out a way to get it written up in such a way that I can get a grant to start it. And the idea is to offer airtime to lesser known and unknown charities to give them airtime on the station so they can have what I call radiothon, so they can raise monies for their projects, medical research, education, you know, whatever they need it for, because nobody's really paying much attention to these little-known charities because they're not big names with big-name celebrities or political or sports figures attached to them. They don't have, you know, poster children that are gorgeously stunning with their blue hair and green teeth, you know, and picture-perfect, whatever, twinkle in their eye, so...
You mean you're going to be dealing with real people, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, if I thought I could reach out to the ghosts and help them become, you know, give them airtime so that they can make their presence known, I would do that too, but I haven't had too many takers on that yet.
Well, you know, we do it here every week, and it's turned into something that I just am, I'm just still amazed at it, that it works as well as it does, and, people seem to love it, and it helps people. I'm just having the time of my life. I think you're on a great, great course with what you're up to. And, you know, I mean, you and I are going to be talking for quite some time. I hope so.
This time I actually made note of what your cell phone and your home number is. I have this email, ladies and gentlemen, from John, and I think we're now up to number 28 or 29. So every time I need to find the phone number for the program, I go back to the first one he sent me. And because I never erase my emails, because you never know when you may need them again. Come on. And so I actually have your numbers down in a safe place, barring a fire, explosion, and, of course, a tornado or a hurricane or a flood. I should have your numbers around.
Well, I'm the same way with you. I mean, I've got everything you've sent. I use Gmail, so it's like it's great.
It's great. You can just accept your layers.
Yeah, you just keep it, and boy, you find yourself going back and searching so often. It's like, how do we ever get along without this stuff, you know? Yeah, but you know, if the technology does go away, oh my God.
Well, the one thing I haven't gotten is I finally got a cell phone for the company. So if people want to text message us next time, I can give you the text number for that phone. I'm just telling you right now, I'm very rusty. Actually, I haven't figured out how to text message yet. So I can't do capitals, can't do punctuation, sentences run on. And sometimes I even spell a word wrong, but I'm a lot better than when I first started. But you could use that, you know, to text message me if you want. In fact, I can give you the text message phone number now, so in case you want to do that. My phone doesn't reach out and touch me, but if I do leave it on during the day, so that's the beginning. Okay, for those who want to text message me, including ghosts, it's 734-277-2733. And that's always on, basically because I need to learn how to use it. But I'm looking at those new apps, things that they have for iPhone and iPad and stuff, and I haven't really taken the plunge for that yet.
You know, it's funny. I swear I would never like a telephone that did lots of things, and because I'm a big believer in simple technologies, like a cell phone should just be a cell phone.
Yeah.
But I then my company gave me a BlackBerry, and I was going, wow, this is so cool. I could do Gmail here, and I got this. I can hear Blog Talk on it. Oh, wow, this is cool. And it's just amazing how this stuff works. So, I will text you. I will help you develop your capability.
I think maybe we ought to create an app for ghosts to call in.
You know, there is some... there has been some work on that. If you go out to digitaldowsing.com, a guy named Bill Chappell, who I've got a number of his devices here, shortly I'll have two Ovuluses, the original model and then the new improved one, and also the EM pump. But he has a dial-in number that you can actually dial in and talk with ghosts through Skype. And to have a talk with spirits, so it has been done. But the notion of being able to, I have to think about a way what the requirements would be to develop an application to do that.
If you get if you develop the app for that, we'll split the money.
Deal.
Because I just think that would be, as my son used to say, way too cool, Mom. And I think it would be in some respects, because I feel that some ghosts are just regular ghosts, but there are a lot of them that are termed the ancient ones or wise, the wise ones. And they're wise or ancient for a reason, because they are accumulation of all knowledge.
I think it would be so cool for some members of your husband's family to come through, and then you just walk over with this mythical app and go, "It's for you."
Yeah, come here. He wants to tell you something. He hasn't told you this in 30 years, and it's time he got it off his chest, more or less.
I think he would be going, "Hey, what?"
I told you, and, you know, when it gets past 11:30 at night, all holds are down. Anything can come out, and usually does, because by 11:30 in the evening, I figure I'm perfectly safe. There's nothing that I can't say that hasn't already been said by somebody else, so therefore, I'm just repeating it.
I love this stuff at night because the things that happen here when we finally go into these kind of later night sessions it's the same way for me. I mean, we get some amazing things. I actually have I'm in Studio B right now because I have two radio studios, and this one we have all our EMF detection equipment. And I don't have it running right now. Matter of fact, I've got it kind of packed in the wrong box right now. I've got to bring it back in here. But we love it because we'll be talking, and all of a sudden my EMF meters will go crazy, especially when we're talking about different spirits and things. Suddenly, and then I'll feel a cold spot here. And I know then that I've been saying all the right things because I get a visitor or two come in, and we get some pretty interesting things around here. So I just get the feeling when we do this reading for you, I think you're gonna be surprised. I really do.
Well, I will tell you this, and I've had two or three people have told me this. One is communicates with animals a lot, and the other one, I don't know what he is. He says he's a minister of sorts, but that they both claim that I have a lot of spirits around me all the time. They don't know whether they're my helpers or they're watching out for me, or they just feel I'm a good positive influence in their lives and they're comfortable around me or something. But they say, can't you feel it? And I said, well, every now and then they let me down and I get very depressed. Oh, well, that must be when they go to the bathroom. I said, must be. Yesterday was a bad day for me, so I figured maybe they went somewhere on a field trip and just left me alone by myself or something.
I get the feeling you got a guy who's your main guide, and then there's a woman that hangs with you. So, kind of the lesser, isn't around as much, but there's a guy that works with you quite a bit, pretty powerful. So I just get when we do this thing, I think they're going to be coming through, and then some family members. It should be pretty wild. I mean, if we do if we do several sessions, I think you're going to have some pretty interesting EVPs. But hey, you know what? We've got 3 minutes. We've been on a while.
Wow, I guess so. I hadn't noticed. When I start talking to you, John, time just is. It doesn't go anywhere. It just is the present always.
Yeah, I just kept
stand
extending
still.
The show.
Still for me.
Yeah. It's the way it is for me too. I mean, we just get into a groove. We get talking, and I just totally enjoyed it tonight. So, but this will not be the last one. That's for sure. We'll keep talking.
Oh, I think so. I think you're good for me because I know that every time I talk with you, my writing seems to go off in a new direction. And like I said, the second book is too much, but it's shaping up and looking pretty good, and I really can't wait to start my third one, because that's when Raul goes through the 12 levels of hell down in central Mexico.
Okay. Well, we will probably have you on in the next couple of months then, and touch base.
Yeah,
and
so
I'll be talking to you in between. We'll actually do some spirit work with you. And this should be interesting, and then we'll just keep going forward, my friend.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for having me on tonight, and thank all your listeners for listening to me as well. I appreciate it a lot.
Okay, thank you, and we look forward to having you on again, Lillian.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a good evening, you guys.
You too.
Okay, bye.
See you later. And with that, that is Lillian Caldwell, and she has turned out to be a great friend of GRI and is one of the nice people in the world, and a great author, and as you can tell, a great intellect. The lady has a lot of brain cells there, and she uses them quite well, and I'm just glad that we did this special Saturday night show. And tomorrow we'll be on... let me think here. I'm trying to remember what I got coming up tomorrow, and I can't. So tell you what, but we will be on at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, and I will be interviewing whatever guest I have on. I don't have the right page up here, but with that, we got less than about a minute. Actually, 1 minute remaining. Just call out who's left in the chat room. We got Blue Goose, Kathy's Distant Echoes. Kathy's didn't have to boot too many people. She was good there. Got Dominica Morey. Hello, Dom. And Elizabeth, how are you, my dear? And we have Fire Witch, who is safely ensconced in her new place, and Gerber Daisy. And we have Pamela. Hello, Pamela. And Shelley Nicole, we are going to be investigating her home down the road. So we're looking forward to that. And with that, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're going to go ahead and sign off with our standard sign out. And we will see you guys tomorrow night. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. Bye now.
You are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, live on blogtalkradio.com.